The following program is produced by the Tech Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Stephen First, Flounder from Animal House, and Deer from Babylon 5, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Technologically, I'm just trying to catch up with everything. I just got high-speed internet at home because I want to freeze my screen faster. You know, I got tired of waiting 2 minutes. I'm going to be frustrated now, man. My friends, they're all tech savvy. They're like, yeah, hook it up yourself. It's easy if you know how to do it. And you're like, yeah. You get home and realize, well, everything's easy if you know how to do it, right? So I spent all week on tech support. You ever talk to those guys? Oh, they hate me. They don't even hide it. They're like, look, you're obviously not getting this at all.
Is there anyone else there we can talk to?
Just me and my son.
How old is he?
7.
Put him on.
He's got all this jargon that apparently I'm supposed to know before I even call you.
Well, your TCP, IP, USB, and LMNOP.
Oh, I got to reconfrag the Jaggenhauser? Okay. Like a caveman, you know, he's trying to get me to reboot something. I got two rocks I'm clinging together trying to get a spark. Going in circles, it's like Abbott and Costello.
Who's your server?
Who's my server?
Exactly.
Exactly what?
No, what's your browser?
Third base, right? I talked to this one guy for like 45 minutes. I finally asked him, how much did this cost me? He said, $2.50 a minute. I know. I was like, so what are you wearing?
This is Tech Talk Radio, the show that talks about computers,
technology,
and the internet. I'm Andy Taylor.
And I'm Justin Lemmy. Welcome.
Thank you for being here. You can find us on the web at techtalkradio.com.
And you know what? We even got a Twitter at Tech Talk Radio.
We use that whole Twitter thing.
We got a Snapchat or an Instagram.
You know what? I have been pretty brutal on Twitter. I got to be honest with you. Because I honestly believe if you have a social media account and you have a lot of people that are connected to you, you have to be vigilant over who follows you and who you follow. Because what happens, see, a lot of people on Twitter, what they do is they'll connect with you and you think, oh, cool, this person connected with me. And right away, they'll connect right back. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I will look at that person's profile. Right. I will see what they're all about. If they all have a link to the same video source, the same feed, you could likely be introducing somebody that is going to spam your users or, you know, spam your followers or spam your connections. So if I see that, I generally don't accept, I don't follow. Sometimes I'll even block, depending on what kind of content I'll find on their Twitter feed.
Huh. So, you know, I really don't use Twitter all that often, but I do know that some days you just blow up my phone with Twitter because I get your alerts. And
right.
So like I'll look down at my phone and there's like 15 Twitter icons and it's just like you just doing, you know, retweeting and talking. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, clear.
Well, one thing I don't like about Twitter accounts, like if you did, I don't think you would do this. And I have some friends who do this, is they just go ahead and all they do is retweet or hashtag. Like that, they won't even say anything except just a bunch of hashtags. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like, if it's politics, you know, they'll have a political hashtag in there. If it's entertainment, but they won't say anything about it. Yeah. It's just a hashtag.
Oh, I just want to put every word in my entire post to be a hashtag. So that way anybody that happens to be searching for that word, they'll see my post and they'll like it.
Yeah.
So it's ridiculous.
That
I have a
happen.
Couple of hashtag dinner with the hashtag wife, hashtag Olive Garden, hashtag Valentine's Day, hashtag yummy.
Right. Yeah. There's a certain amount of etiquette. I think it's etiquette. And that's the thing is social networking should have some sort of kind of etiquette when it comes to not only that, but also on Facebook too. Because there are people that tag. If you have a lot of users, you'll get tagged a lot. There's a certain amount of etiquette when you're tagging somebody to think about, you know, how many times you're tagging them and what it's going to do to their feed. So, yeah, I mean, it seems silly. And for those that are listening that are not on Twitter, that are not on Facebook, you know, or even Instagram, they do the same thing. You get a lot of hashtags on Instagram. And then it kind of mess things up.
You know, speaking of etiquette, I had something kind of funny happen to me today.
All right.
It was on Facebook. Got a friend, is a personal friend and obviously a Facebook friend. But he had, for the past couple of days, he's been going on to, you know, public posts. Mostly all of them are just, you know, political posts and stuff talking about Trump or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're public, which means anybody can see it. Anybody can, you know, comment on it, whatever. And he'll go and he'll dig through the comments and start getting into a war of words with people. And he'll start to say some pretty, you know, pretty disgusting, not disgusting, but just pretty rude.
Inflammatory.
Inflammatory things, yeah. Insulting people and things that I would not ever dare hear from him in person. Like, he's not that type of person, you know, in person. But, you know, anybody's a keyboard warrior.
That's the term. Everybody write that down.
Keyboard, or actually, they call them social justice warriors.
Yeah.
SJWs. He'll say some pretty nasty stuff. But what he doesn't realize is that because the post is public, and it's not like I go to those same posts and look at it, but what happens is I'm scrolling through my Facebook feed and it will say, so-and-so made a comment on this, and it shows me his exact comment on that public post. Even though there may be 10,000 comments,
right,
it shows me his comment right there. So I messaged him today and I was like, you do realize that I can see that nasty, you know, hateful speech that you're putting out there, right?
Right.
He was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, this particular post, I see that what you said, and you know, I can correct you right now that, you know, what you said is not true. And
right.
He was just like, well, how did you see? Are you stalking me? I'm like, no, it's on my Facebook feed. Things like that. If you comment on a public post, don't think that you're just going to be into the depths of Facebook where nobody will ever find your comment. No, because it will put your comment on your friend's Facebook feed.
Because you're connected to them, right?
Because you're connected to them. And so it may not be all the time. But you never know when your comment will show up on your friend's Facebook feed and they're going to get to know what you said and whether or not it be something really nice or something really, really insulting. So watch what you say.
There's no real anonymity with Facebook, which I think people need to realize. I mean, that's the whole point of it. There's no way that you can make a comment and mark it as anonymous. You can't do that.
Well, the only way to market as anonymous is just change your Facebook name and put your profile picture to be a black box.
Or second accounts, which some people do. But you know, then they'll make a mistake and post something that, you know, that always happens.
Well, you know how you can actually change your Facebook name, you know, like what you want to be notified or known as on Facebook.
Right.
But I seen somebody who did that where they changed their name to be anonymous Facebook user one.
Right.
And then they put their profile picture to be a black box.
Right.
But if you click on their profile, it takes you to facebook.com/john.go or whatever their name is. I'm like, really? Like, so it leads you right to their page, but the thing is, it's their real name behind their page. So it's like, okay, yeah, you're really anonymous.
I've had that happen where I have a couple of friends out there, and I've never said anything, but a couple of friends of mine that I have their phone numbers, and they're in my contact list, and you can import your contact list from Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be looking down my contact list, and it'll say that person who I know what their username is on Facebook, but it'll have a completely different name. Because they've tied that phone number to that other account. So I'll go ahead and pull that up and look at it and go, oh, this is their stalker profile. This is the one they go and look at other people. So you got to be careful of that, what phone number is associated with that. Because, you know, you might have a total alter ego, you know, Clark Kent, Superman, you know, alter ego is going to show up in that. So things to think about when you're creating your Facebook account. You can subscribe to our show at Spreaker, TuneIn, and now Google Music. You'll find the links on our website at techtalkradio.com as well. Plus, we're on YouTube, and you know, people have been asking us lately, and I don't know, tell me what you think about this, about putting our show on YouTube. Because apparently we can take our audio feed and it'll put our logo up there through, and we can do this through our Spreaker account, I guess. And it'll put it, would people listen? See, I always think of YouTube as being a visual source, but people listen to radio over their television.
YouTube is just a media source, period. I mean, you can have video. We can do a recording of the show. I know we've tried it in the past, but yeah, just even just putting the logo up there and putting the audio to it. I mean, you can get some YouTube listeners or watchers to listen to it. Yeah, absolutely.
Might be kind of cool. So we'll look for that. All right, so today's show, we kind of want to focus on the questions. We've had guests, and we will have some guests a little later on. Big news from Verizon this week that they've introduced something brand new, at least, or they've gone back to it. So we'll talk about that. Great product that was at CES this year. We got a chance to talk with the CEO about this product called Tappy, which would be kind of neat. We'll do that a little later. But we wanted to kind of go over these questions. And anytime you have a question, you can call us at 520-204-1754, 1754. That's 520-204-1754. If we can't get to the question You know, if we're not here, you can leave a voicemail. You can text that number as well. You can send a text message to 520-204-1754 and we'll use it. And actually in the last...
It's actually just Andy's personal cell phone.
No, it forwards to my personal cell phone.
Ah, okay.
So I will get it, but we will get it and then we'll use it. So all right, here's some of the questions.
Congratulations, you signed up for Cat Facts.
What is Cat Facts?
You never heard that? It's no. Like this, I'm sorry. It's an online running joke where somebody was like talking about how they signed up. They give their phone number or something, and there'll be right. People will be like, they'll go out and they'll sign them up for these crazy like text message services where they'll get random text messages. They call them like the most famous one is Cat Facts, where like every day you get a text message about a fact about a feline, a cat.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And it's just ridiculous because if you try to unsubscribe, it keeps resubscribing you to more things.
No, we won't do that. We won't do that. All right. The first one coming in from Casey. We thought we'd go ahead and take care of this one. Casey's in Tucson. Okay. Casey's upgrading a laptop and wants to know, is it worth it? Now, the first question is there a way to build a laptop?
Well, obviously, because Dell does it.
He's talking about like himself. Could he go out and buy parts and build a laptop?
I doubt it.
No. I've never seen that. Cable. They're small now. I mean, everything is really small in form factor. So, I mean, it's something you could carry around if you wanted to. But
the thing is, when you build a laptop or if you ever tear apart a laptop and you look at the intricate details, I mean, they have to pack so much technology inside of a small little form factor. So you have to have like, I mean, it's microscopic. I mean, control over being able to hook things up and you're not going
to. You have to be careful, too, because you can change the grounding on that laptop.
Yeah.
And it can change the airflow. And you got to be careful what you move, what you change, and, you know, take it to somebody that's qualified to repair them or knows what they're doing. Because you just open it up and, there's lots of screws in there. And by undoing them, you can easily pry something open. And then next thing you know, there's your keyboard and you can change your keyboard out. And there's stuff you could do yourself. But really, you should kind of get an understanding of how that might change things.
And laptops, for the most part, are cheap enough that you can just get a new laptop for less than it would cost you to try to find the parts and try to build it yourself. Again, you'd have to have so much specialized equipment to do it. I think it'd be just, wouldn't want to go that route.
Well, his question is, he wants to know about upgrading his laptop. It's a Windows XP machine, 2 gigs of RAM. Wanted to know if there's anything he could do to get better performance of it. Said, should he ditch it and buy a Windows 10 desktop?
You're talking about it. Yeah. Windows XP is ancient by technology standards.
Mm-hmm. Is he going to run into this problem too, where Windows XP will only accept, or this machine may only accept 2 gigs of RAM?
Yeah, and if you try to go and run, you know, you're trying to upgrade. Let's say you put Windows 10 on there, it's not going to run on that machine because it's just too old. You don't have enough system resources. You may be able to get away with running Windows 7, but very, very minimal.
I remember I tried. I have an old HP that ran XP, and it's great. And matter of fact, it still runs to this day. But I put Windows 7 on there, and the one thing we could not get to work was our sound card, our audio card that was a part of that. It just said we couldn't get it to work. We did with an external sound card, and that worked okay, but we didn't get the performance that you would expect. So it was better for us as an XP machine not connected to the net.
I think it'd be better just to go upgrade it. And again, if you do a desktop... you're opening yourself up to the much more possibilities of being able to upgrade, you know, later on.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've mentioned this website in the past. I've used it before. It's great. I would check out pcpartpicker.com. It's a really great website. It helps you build computers from the ground up, you know, part by part. Now you probably are going to, well, I don't know how to do that. I don't even know what parts I'm supposed to look for. There are actually completed builds that people have built. So basically you go in there and say, my budget is $1,000.
Right.
And it'll sort out all the builds by $1,000. And it will say, here are the builds that you can do for $1,000.
That's not bad.
Lists all the parts. And not only that, but you just click on the part and it takes you straight to Amazon or Newegg or whatever. It takes you straight there to buy the part you need. The only thing is you're just going to have to figure out how to put it all together. But again, that's really not that hard.
It's not that difficult. It really isn't. But again, you know, don't drink coffee while you're building.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I only say that from experience. It's happened.
Yeah. But, you know, building it is really not that difficult. And it allows you in the future to use some of those same parts to upgrade to even a better computer. I mean, I'm still using the same case for my first build. Right. And I've just upgraded it now, and it's still a great build. And my upgrade on this build was, I want to say $1,200 to upgrade. And I pretty much upgraded everything, processor, yeah, RAM. I got two video cards, a new motherboard, pretty much everything in there. And, if I were to go and buy that type of computer on the market, I'd probably be looking at around $3,000.
$3,000. Yeah. See, that's the thing. When you build it yourself, you're going to save some money. Now, here's absolutely one thing to think about. Now, for people who have, maybe that's all they have is a laptop that is everything they love because they like the mobility of it. They like to be able to go to a coffee shop and sit and use their public Wi-Fi or take it with them to work and not have to deal with a backup drive to move files back and forth, you know, or the cloud. One thing that some people have been doing lately is they've been going out and rather than spending the money on, you know, a desktop machine or even building one, they'll buy a laptop. And you can actually use a laptop computer. In many cases, they're going to have DVI out or even HDMI out. Mm-hmm. And you can get a monitor for your desktop. And you can buy monitors cheap now for like anywhere from $149 to $200 for a good size monitor.
Yeah.
I think the Acers we have in our studio, we bought on sale. We were able to find them for like $149. And they're $250 monitors.
Yeah, the two Dell monitors that I have as my side monitors, I think I bought those each on Amazon. I think it was like $120 each.
Yeah.
And they're like 20-inch screens, so it's great.
So the nice thing about having
27.
This kind of setup, though, is you come home from work, you plug your laptop in, plug the monitor into it, so you don't have to rely on to maybe your 15- or 17-inch screen on your laptop.
Sure.
And then plug a keyboard. Have a keyboard and a mouse on your desk and just put the laptop to kind of aside. And then you have the same data, the same operating system, and you can work there at a desk and still be using your CPU, you know, your hard drive, et cetera, off the laptop. And so for many, sometimes investing maybe $600-$700 in a reasonable laptop, that's not top of the line, but a reasonable laptop, will make you happy. So something to think about. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Casey will find a solution in that. Rita, she listens to us via Indiana Talks, which is really cool. You can hear us in Indiana Talks on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday. Says she got a new laptop, but she has a couple of programs on her old laptop, but doesn't have the disk for them anymore. This happens a lot. People say, mm-hmm, I can't find the disk. You know, I want to run this program. She says, is there a program that can still make these run on the new machine? Now, if her older laptop is an XP or it's, Windows, even a Windows Vista or Windows 7 laptop, you still may not be able to, even if you had the disk, right? You still might not be able to get it to run on Windows 10.
That's true. I mean, some applications are just too old. Even if you try to run it in compatibility mode, may not do it. The question that I have, though, is what applications are they? Because a lot of manufacturers or software manufacturers, they have gone the way of digital downloads for their software.
Uh-huh.
So, if you don't have the disk, but you know the name of the program or you know the name of the manufacturer, go to their website. See if you can download that software.
This has been a lifesaver. Adobe does this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a previous version of Adobe Photoshop and you've registered it, you can actually grab that online and say, this is a situation, you can't find the disk, but you know you had a license for it. You can go to their website and you can basically log in with your Adobe account and download that software, which is a major help.
Absolutely.
So that's one thing to think about.
That's what I would go for.
There is a program out there made by LapLink. It's LapLink. It's called PC Mover. Now, we've tested it out. It worked with a couple of programs. It didn't work with a couple of others. It was kind of a bit spotty for us. Now, this will allow you in some cases, and again, depending on how that program is installed and if it writes to the registry, et cetera, you may be able to move a program. Take a look at their website. We're not saying it definitely will work for you, but again, that's from LapLink. LapLink is one of the you know, one of the programs has been around for a long time that people have used to copy files from one computer to another. And this one, PC Mover, allows you to kind of move programs. So if this is a case, you may find some success in this. Bill in Tucson. All right. Bill says that he saw the videos on our Facebook page with the interviews that we've done. He wants to know how to do the graphics, the dual cameras. What does he need? The whole bit. All right. Well, if you watch any of the videos, you're going to see a small logo in the left corner powered by Wirecast. Now, there are different ways to do this. Now, Wirecast is one of them. Wirecast is a software that you purchase. You know, you download it. Wirecast runs anywhere from, and I believe there's two versions. There's a $500 version and then Wirecast Pro, which is almost a grand. But it will allow you to do dual cameras, graphics, video pre-rolls. Comes with New Blue Effects Tyler. More people are finding out about this and they're saying, I want to be able to do these Facebook Live videos, do videos through Twitter, through their service, and others, but they want to be able to do it from the desktop, not with their smartphone. Mm-hmm. That's one of the programs. Now I don't want to say freeware. It's not really, it's one of those programs called OBS Studio that's out there too.
Oh yeah, OBS.
Mm-hmm. And this will let you do it. A lot of gamers use this for streaming.
Yeah, I use OBS.
Do you really? And have you ever streamed a game with it?
Yeah, I've done like Twitch streaming ever so often. I really don't do it all that much anymore because when I play a game, I'm there to play the game for myself. I'm not really there for others to watch me play a game because, whatever. But yeah. I've done it.
All right. So that's one thing. And again, very easy to set up. And they do. Matter of fact, you can follow them. I think they have a website. It's Telestream Wirecast. Actually, it's Facebook. You can go to their Facebook page and they do talks all the time. So if you're if you're a church, if you're a company, or if you're a school and you want to be able to set something like this up to do multiple cameras, take a look at them. But you know what? Have some content. I have some friends that are always popping up on Facebook Live, but they're just sitting there staring at the camera. Okay, I don't know if we can do this one in this time, but this is from Priscilla in Indio, California. So I got asked to do a photo shoot for a group of about 20 people. I've never done a photo shoot with that many people. I'm kind of nervous. Is there a specific lens I should use for this kind of shot? I have the basic 18 millimeter, 50 millimeter, and 70 to 300 millimeter right now. And it needs to shoot a large group of people. I do have a couple suggestions.
Yeah, I mean, I know I just got myself back into photography, but this sounds a little bit like beyond my
expertise. you're doing more of the baby and close-ups and stuff like this. There is one thing that you could possibly do in this situation. One is to use, actually, believe it or not, to use and again, it's going to depend on the camera, but if you have a zoom lens, a lens that's got a pretty good focal length on it, probably, she said she had a 70 to 300 millimeter. You could use that. The 50 millimeter should work fine, but you could use that depending on the group, the amount of people. She said 20 people. So what you do is, if you can, you move back. Now, you would probably first think, okay, do it with a wide angle lens. But the problem is wide angle lens does distort a little and it's going to change. If you move back further, and it's going to seem weird because we always think of in photography, you want to get up close and get personal with people. But in this situation, you're trying to get a group. Don't try and be right up on them.
Yeah, no.
You could be back and then use the zoom feature, zoom in manually and get a nice shot of how you want, nice composition there, and take the photo that way. Rather than being up close and doing it with a lens that's wide. Now, in some cases, the wide's probably going to do better for you. And it could change, again, the composition of the picture. The other thing, some people have suggested this, and I don't know if this would work, and I've done something similar with a photo retouch, is to take in segments. So hold on, 1, 2, 3, on a tripod, the whole bit, and then stitch them together in Photoshop. Some people have said that. I don't know if that theory is going to work for everybody, but it is another way to think about that. But I would probably go with a zoom lens and zoom in that way.
I guess it's kind of one of those things that's trial and error or just coming from experience. And I just really honestly don't have enough experience to say much about that.
Cool. We'll give you a website coming up a little later on that has more info about photography, et cetera. Right. One of the other things, too, coming up is we're going to talk with the CEO of a company called Tappy. Now, imagine you have your favorite watch. Maybe it was given to you or, a favorite piece of jewelry. And you like to be able to do, you know, pay with your watch. You want to use technology, but you don't want to get rid of your favorite watch or your favorite piece of jewelry. How about if you were able to pay with your favorite watch? They have a way to integrate that technology into what you currently have rather than you going out and buying a, you know, an all new, you know, Samsung Gear or an Apple Watch.
Oh,
so
okay, cool.
We'll talk with Wayne Leong, the CEO of the company. Our telephone number here, 1-520, area code 520-204-1754. You can text us, you can call us with your questions, and we may use it on the show.
All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
What? I can't read that. The video is failing.
Get a computer.
What?
Get a new computer.
What? Hello?
Get a new computer.
Hi, I'm Rick Derringer, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Justin Lemmy.
I'm Andy Taylor. You can find us, again, 520-204-1754. You can text us or you can drop us an email, too.
Please do.
It's techguys at techtalkradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, too. All right, so I wanted to give that website address, Priscilla's question out in Indio about photography. Another website you can go to is Photoshop User. And we've had Scott on the show before, Scott Kelby. And, you know, he runs this group that helps photographers not only in the Photoshop process, tweaking and adjusting photos and all that, but also in the composition and setup of photos. So they give you some really good tips. And there's a big Photoshop World Conference coming up in a couple of months. So something to take a look at. And again, Photoshop User, it's a good one for photographers. You have your favorite piece of jewelry. You want to be able to do, you know, pay services and other things with that, but without having to go out and getting a, you know, a gear watch or anything like that. There's a less expensive way to get that done, and that's called Tappy. And Wayne Leong is standing by. He's the CEO of the company. Wayne, thanks for coming on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Tell us what Tappy is all about.
Well, Tappy is, to be honest, it's a lot of people don't actually really like what they're wearing right now with the smartwatches out there because I feel like that they're being forced to wear these gadgets, but in fact that they like to wear their existing fashionable accessories and the branded accessories. So I'm enabling a lot of these fashion accessory brands to, without any type of tricky accessory or changing, compromising their designs, adding a lot of power into it, and I'm just basically adding a very simple chip and NFC antenna into their product. So it could be in any type of product. It could be like a ring. It could be like a strap or inside a watch. And then enabling them to just do a tap and pay.
Now, is this something, Wayne, that they would get through their wireless provider? Is this something they could purchase and then kind of put, you know, themselves to use, or is this something they would just, you know, they would have to order and then find a way to get it done?
The business model is it's actually up to the big brands to decide. Mm-hmm. I just provide the technology. So from what I understand from all my customers, they are trying to provide an actual complete product. Some may provide an accessory to allow you to just buy that accessory and adapt that into your existing product. So, for example, if you own an existing watch and then you would like to have that existing watch to enable that function, that one particular brand may just offer a strap, like a leather strap, and then you're able to go to a store and buy that leather strap and then just buy that like a payment strap and then put it back onto your existing watch. And then you can already use that right away and have that enabled. I've been in the smartwatch business for 8 years. Mm-hmm. I've started my own brand of smartwatches. I've manufactured for a lot of the big smartwatches brand out there. Then I started my technology. I basically understand the whole why, and because I also know the traditional watch market and doing traditional watch OEM for like 35 years in the family business, we really understand how this can be done properly now.
Right.
So So now enabling the big brands to do this, it makes more sense, and they can really market this these type of products properly to the customers.
What has been, Wayne, what has been like the biggest hurdle in technology to make this available for market? Has it been battery? Has it been the standards?
No, actually, tap and pay is the biggest hurdle. Has always been the ecosystem. The technology has always been there. In Asia, actually, NFC payment or public transit has always been existed for like many years, like almost like 15, 20 years ago.
Wow.
However, it's been there a while ago. And where I come from in Hong Kong, we have something called the Octopus, and it's like for the public transit.
Right.
We use that for like the metro, for the buses, and for everything pretty much. And even now we use that for to buy convenience stores and a lot of things. We use that. So basically, the technology has been there. Now, why the rest of the world has not been able to use this technology is because of the whole ecosystem behind it. Let's say there are banks involved, there are telcos that are involved, there are a lot of parties involved trying to get deals done, and it just couldn't get the deals right. It only started about 3 years ago when everything started to come together, and then when Apple started to decide to push Apple Pay and prove that, okay, we can actually use our watch to pay with. And then everybody starts to realize, it's educating everybody about what tap and pay is all about, using their phones to tap and using their watch to tap. So it actually helps a lot. They're educating more than the banks could do. Yeah.
Do you think the consumer, maybe the American consumer, is different in that they tend to just kind of go with a brand and maybe overlook the technology that really is available to expand, and that's got to be somewhat of a hurdle as well.
Well, in North America, currently, it's because the merchants, the POS terminals that are enabled with the tap and pay, it's actually not as saturated yet.
Right.
Actually, the developing countries are actually being more aggressive in deploying all these tap and pay enabled terminals. So North America, there are a few places, a lot of places that you can use them, but people don't even actually realize that their existing credit card has a tap and pay chip on it. So it takes a lot of education. I mentioned before that Apple is doing a lot of education, Google is doing a lot of education on why it's so convenient to be able to tap and pay. And when that happens, more and more merchants or banks are trying to push the merchants to upgrade their machines, the terminal machines, to be able to allow buyers to tap and pay. So when that happens, the whole market is going to have that demand, and then it's easier for the brands to move forward on promoting these type of products out. But I think this will come much quicker when this year we'll see a lot more of that.
One of the things, Wayne, I was checking out the website, which our listeners can take a look. It's gotappy.com.
Correct.
I was looking at it, and I noticed that there's even a module, or an app, I should say, where somebody could really, photograph their credit card, put it into like a Tappy account, or use that. So you've already got kind of the groundwork done for the user to start maybe getting comfortable. And that's, that's also a thing with our generations that we have here. Some are not comfortable yet with using the smart technology, but this can kind of get them to move along.
Putting the technology in hardware, making it convenient, is one thing. But actually, understanding how the payment, where the money goes in behind, is actually quite essential for the user.
Yeah.
So there's two ways to do the payment right now. As we know, Apple Pay or Google Pay, that's like post pay. And that means that they're basically making a virtual version of your existing credit cards, put it into the phone. So that is something that many people has already started to experience when they have tried Apple Pay and Google Android Pay.
Right.
Now, with Tappy, we're not going this route yet.
Right.
Initially, we're trying to do something called prepaid, which is like a gift card type of idea, and we're not even using a Tappy account. you're not actually putting money into Cappy's bank, or let's say.
Right.
We're actually going to pretty much all the major countries and partner with the major banks. For example, in the UK, we partner with a bank called Barclays, which
right.
is a very reputable bank.
Yeah, very big bank.
Knows. And then when the consumer buys the product, it could be any branded product, and when they activate the product and the card, before they go to the Barclays app, they go to a Tappy app, and then they do a very simple registration to identify that this is a legitimate product. And then it gets redirected to the Barclays bank app. And then, you know, once the customer sees, oh, this is a Barclays bank app, and it's not like a Tappy app, and then they start feeling comfortable and inputting more confidential information and loading actually money into that account. So this is now called a prepaid method.
Right.
So you would put like maybe 100 sterling pounds in it, and then once you put money in that account, so every transaction that you do, instantly on the app you can see already what you have spent, how much, and where. This will be a great product, you know, even to for your family, you know, if you want to have this for your kids and make sure that they, you know, where they have spent the money and,
yeah.
and control that also. It's perfect. So this would be the first step right now for Tappy to enable people to, in different countries, to do this tap and pay as a prepaid format. In the future, in about a year or two, we have our token service platform, which is pretty much going to be exactly what Apple Pay is providing.
Right.
But this comes a little bit later, and it's actually going to be taking a little bit more time to develop.
Will this make this type of technology a little more affordable for manufacturers and for the consumer?
Definitely. I would say for a retail price, if this was like a like that chip was embedded into a leather strap, it should cost no more than $30 US.
Wow, that's much better than spending $800 on a watch. Yeah,
if that happens, and I think people would definitely like to at least would love to try it at least, and less reluctant to. It's not, and they don't think it. They won't perceive this as more like a smartwatch product. It's more like a very functional everyday product that they would, you know, might use.
Again, they have control over what they really want to embed that in, something that they use every day.
Correct.
I have to ask, how was CES for you?
I actually had a lot of pre-set appointments with existing OEMs.
Right.
And I actually showed this to a lot of my existing OEM customers, and they all loved it. They all pretty much want to have these working prototypes to live samples, like basically with live bank spin sponsor to be able to experience this. So it looks like that this is the year where you'll start to see some of the branded smartwatches.
Right.
I would say like maybe the hybrid smartwatches that you're seeing out there. With the fashion brands are going to be starting to apply payment technology. If not by the end of the year, I'm sure by 2018 you'll see a bunch of watches and jewelry is going to have a payment capability on it.
Well, that's what's so great about CES is that we always get to kind of get a preview of stuff, and we may not see it for a year or 2 years, but eventually it will come down the wire. Now, if our listeners want to keep up on what you're doing, they can go to the site and check out the pamphlet. It's gotappy.com. Wayne, want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about it, because, you know, this is the technology we like to kind of keep an eye out and how it's going to help us consumers and give us more choices.
Yes, no problem. Thank you.
It's how technology is going, man. Your favorite stuff that you can carry with you, and it's all ready for tech.
You know, I like that idea because, you know, I do have a nice watch that Misa's grandfather, you know, gave to me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And, you know, I would like to have a smartwatch, but at the same time, I don't want to not wear this watch either. So that's it's a cool little trade-off to be able to do that and still wear this watch and still have some pieces of technology involved in it.
You could be like those guys in Silicon Valley on the TV show on HBO, just wear two or three watches.
Well, you know, I'm not that much of a nerd.
Our telephone number here, 520-204-1754. Find us on the web at techtalkradio.com. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemmy. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, this is comedian Kathleen Madigan, and you're listening to Slick Jack. Justin and Andy on Tech Talk Radio, something I will never be listening to because I hate technology. But for those of you that do, these are your guys.
We're back with Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
And I'm Justin.
You can find us on Twitter at Tech Talk Radio, and you can subscribe to the show and get updates whenever we do a brand new show through Spreaker, through Google, and even through our website. We have all of the link information there. You can come to the website and surf around and actually listen to the show. We've got it very easy for you to do, and you can listen mobile as well, so it makes it nice.
Awesome.
All right, so we've just mentioned something, too. We're talking about Silicon Valley. You have a date for the return of the show?
April 23rd.
Okay, so if you, and you know, the real bad thing about it is I when I re-signed up for cable, I only got a 3-month subscription to HBO for free, you know, as part of the, you know, okay, mm-hmm. you're signing up the whole bit. So that means it'll be after that 3 months. So it means I'm going to have to subscribe.
Yep.
It's a good show.
Yep. Yeah, well, it's a great show. I love it. That's probably one of my favorite shows. Yeah, totally. Yeah,
I'll tell you the downside to watching shows like, you're going to go back and watch some of them. I'm going to go back and watch some of them and catch up. I've just recently got into the show This Is Us on NBC.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about NBC, and you know, we have Xfinity service, which owns NBC, Comcast, is you can watch all of the episodes. So I had not watched the show. So a friend of mine said, you know, you got to watch it. You got to watch the whole episode. Because I watched half and I was like, eh. So mm-hmm. I watched it and then I was hooked. So next thing you know, it became a binge fest a couple weeks ago. I sat through 14 hours of this over 2 days of watching This Is Us. And then I got to the last episode and I was ready to watch another one. And it says, now I got to wait till Tuesday for when the show's on.
Yeah.
So I had to wait. And it was like, I didn't want to wait anymore. I think the networks should just say, forget it and just put them all on their services. So, and if you want to just watch them, I don't know.
Yeah, but they don't get the advertising dollars then.
Well, they get some advertising dollars. That's good enough.
Not really.
I mean, probably not, no.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing. Is you watch it streaming on their website, usually they cut out most of the commercials, so you just get to watch the straight through.
Yeah.
They might put one or two in, you know, in the middle, or one in the beginning, one at the end. Actually, they don't put them at the end because they know you're going to stop.
Sometimes they skip them, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of streaming, if you want to stream without having to worry about losing, you know, data, Verizon Wireless just introduced their brand new unlimited VZW, which is a new unlimited plan. And on the line with us is Chris DeBorn. Chris DeBorn is the market president for the South Central market with Verizon Wireless. Krista, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andy. I'm happy to be here. It's an exciting day.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's been just a bit crazy today with, you know, with all of the rollout of something like this, because really this is a standpoint of wanting to get the word out, wanting to get the message out to all of those subscribers or people that are in that transitional period looking for a new carrier. What is Verizon exactly doing with this to kind of change the way it's looking at these plans?
Yeah, so today we are executing on our Verizon Unlimited plan. So this is an exciting opportunity for our base of customers, certainly. They've certainly spoken about this. They've asked. We listened. We worked very quietly behind the scenes to ready our network to make sure that the hallmark to our brand is not compromised in any way whatsoever. So today, our base of customers can take on the unlimited pricing in structure if that's what is going to meet their needs. And we can bring back anybody to the Verizon network who might have otherwise went out to explore unlimited services with other carriers, or those that have just been waiting for Verizon to have unlimited so that they can come and enjoy what a reliable network experience is really like.
Well, let's talk about the network itself for those that are maybe wondering, well, can I get it in this area or can I get it in this area? What kind of coverage are users going to find with Verizon?
Well, we have the most coverage coast to coast. So everything that you've ever seen with our Verizon 4G LTE coverage map applies to the unlimited plan. It's coast to coast. We cover more Americans than any other carrier. We continue to work on winning the accolades and respect of our industry through evaluators like RootMetrics, which gives us a clean sweep in cities all the time. So the exact same network that you have heard of, have maybe experienced or know Verizon to deliver coast to coast is the exact same network that will be available for our unlimited customers.
Now, you find that a lot of these, I'm taking a look at the plan that Verizon is offering. Do you find that this really benefits the family or maybe even a small business situation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of our most popular value propositions is the family. So four lines for $45 each on Verizon Unlimited data is an incredible value. What people will do as a family to stay connected will be uninterrupted. It'll be something that is part of their lifestyle. And it's something that we really pride ourselves on, making sure that people can connect how they want, when they want, where they want. Is not just a statement for us. It's truly a way of life. It's the way that we've engineered the network. And so I wouldn't trust my family to any other network other than a reliable, tested, tried, and true leader in the industry like Verizon.
Now, what if a family is listening to this, Krista, and they're only have, maybe dad is the only one that currently has, you know, he may have the iPhone 7 or 6, and, you know, all of a sudden the kids are going to need phones. How is that going to be structured? That are they going to have to purchase the phones outright, or can that also be rolled into the plan?
Yeah, so if we have one user and they want to grow their account to bring family members over in the scenario you just described, then we have great offers for new lines of service coming over to Verizon. They certainly have the option to secure their equipment just like they would today. They could either do an installment plan where they make a small monthly payment for their full price of their equipment over 24 months, or they can buy their equipment outright, or they could come in and trade in their equipment and take advantage of whatever offer might be available at the time. But they are certainly capable of coming over, joining the one user's account, growing it to a unlimited family plan where you have more users sharing unlimited data and have a great experience.
Now, Krista, I am on Verizon, and I have a 3-gigabyte plan, and the last month I went for a ride in a B-17 Flying Fortress, and I decided to stream Facebook Live the entire experience. And the first thing I got off the plane was the notice that I'd gone over my data. So this is going to eliminate anybody really having to worry about getting that notice that, hey, buddy, you've gone over your data. It's, you know, going to be an extra $15 charge. When you say unlimited, I mean, somebody could basically then stream a flight and a B-17.
Yeah, listen, we engineered this network for the next gen of users. So I think that what you just described is very much the next gen of how people are using data. It's why we worked behind the scenes to make sure that we were ready to optimize the network, because we want the experiences to be as reliable as we have always been in the marketplace.
Yeah.
But certainly, you could stream a lot of interesting content and not get that warning at the end that you're going to be over your data.
We've just become this huge streaming society, like, you know, like we're doing right now. How is this going to apply to those that have say hotspots, because, you know, a lot of people want to use their computer and they want to be able to get connected to the net. Will they still be able to have that applied to their account?
Yeah, absolutely. Our plan includes hotspots. You know, for hotspots and computing devices, the exception would be tablets. But think about your Jetpack as an example. They will still have unlimited Verizon access to the network. Once they get to 10 gigabytes of data, they will slow down on those particular devices. But that does not apply to phones. Phones has unlimited data. It's just the Jetpack and the hotspots where we will go to the 10 gigabyte level, and then we will slow them down so that we can make sure that they will have a great experience on 3G speeds while not compromising the experience of all the rest of our network users.
So if I'm somebody that I like to prop my phone up at work, and they don't have a Wi-Fi for me to connect to, and I want to watch maybe The Crown on Netflix or something else, mm-hmm. I can then use that and get HD quality through an LTE connection?
Yeah, the LTE HD quality is available. And on the Jetpack scenario that you just described, that will be available through the first 10 gigabytes of data. And then you'll be on 3G speeds until your bill cycle starts over. But on your phone, as you've just described, you get HD quality continuously as part of the plan. You don't have to do anything extra to take advantage of the HD quality of our network. So that's going to be a pretty exciting opportunity for people to really take advantage of the full breadth of what the network can do.
Now, now the structure, obviously, this is $45 if you get four lines. If you're only getting three lines or two lines, or even if I'm Joe Bachelor and I only have one phone, I can then you're going to be paying a little more for it. How's that structure working?
Yeah, you pay $80. The way to look at it is one line is $80. And then when you get to two and above, you start to divide the math a little differently. We use the four-line scenario because it's the easiest, most common scenario yeah. that we deal with outside of a single user. So, again, it's $45 per line for four or $80 for one. And there's a pricing matrix that goes from one line up to 10 lines. Customers can access that pricing matrix on our website at .com, Verizon.com. And you can also visit any store, and we'd be happy to walk you through what's the best plan for you. We also want to make sure people know that this is about choice. So we're very excited about Verizon Unlimited, as you could imagine.
Yeah.
But we also have the other plans, small, medium, and large, still available because not every user is going to need unlimited data. So there's price points associated with those as well, and all that's available on our .com site and in our stores.
Very good stuff. Again, the listeners can visit the stores. They'll be able to get more information about that, check out the devices, and see some of the different. I love going to the stores because they have so many toys to play with. I was like, I want to add this. This is fun. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is quite a playground. I would agree.
Absolutely. All right. Well, again, our listeners, go to the website, get more info there. Thank you so much, Krista. I know you've been very busy today. And we're looking forward to seeing how this rolls out. And again, now, of course, Verizon Wireless customers or even people who are thinking in that mid-phase have an alternative to look at.
That's right.
It's been interesting to see some of the comments that were on the Facebook feed after this video. And you can check the video out as well on facebook.com/techtalkers of people that were either going to come back to Verizon and check it out or were currently on the service and wanted to know how to get it. So I think people like this idea of an unlimited, you know, type of service. I know I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, nothing worse than getting that data out and notice.
Yeah, but the thing is, you got it should be noted that even though it's unlimited, it's not really unlimited.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're going to throttle you if you're on a tablet. So,
well, it's not even just that. I've heard that the way they're doing it is you will have like a certain amount of data that's at 4G speeds, but then after a certain amount, it's something to do with the cell tower too. Like it's not like throttling, but they prioritize your traffic lower than other people. After you cross a certain threshold, you don't get throttled in terms of that, but your traffic, if you go to a cell tower or you connect to a cell tower and there are other users that haven't met that cap yet, their traffic will be prioritized before yours. So it's like throttling.
Yeah.
But you still get the speeds. It just, you know, it may be a little bit more delayed.
Right. Well, they can get more information by going to the website to find out how that's going to work for them. And of course, you know, if you have questions, just go into your carrier store and ask them all about that.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up, we've got a website of the week and a little warning if you are on Facebook and who you're following. We'll share that with you. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemme. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
What I really need is a computer. How about that one?
Mm-hmm. That technology is 3 months old. Only suckers buy out-of-date machines. You're not a sucker, are you, sir?
Heavens, no.
Oh, good. Because if you were, I'd have to ask you to leave the store.
I just need something to receive email.
You'll need a top-of-the-line machine for that. That's the same computer astronauts use to do their taxes.
I was an astronaut.
Of course you were.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Justin Lemme.
I'm Andy Taylor. Thank you for being here. So a little word of warning if you're on Facebook and you have some people you want to follow. Or maybe you notice you get a friend request from Brian Adams. You know the singer? Mm-hmm. You know, everything I do for you.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Apparently, Brian is saying that somebody is making fake pages that look like his page. And writing to fans pretending to be him. So they're saying, be careful. This is a problem, though, on Facebook. I get upset when I see this, people saying, oh, you were hacked because somebody just sent me a friend request.
Yeah.
And it has your picture on it. And that's not necessarily them being hacked. What it is, basically, and again, yeah, that's why you got to be careful who you accept as a friend. They will take your picture, maybe replicate your name, and then they will go to your friends list and start adding friends. And then keeps going from there. And the problem is, it may not even be you. And most of the people respond with, you've been hacked, change your password and all that. So that way, if you get a friend request from somebody you're already friends with on Facebook, ask them. Just send them
exactly.
A note. You know, and then
I do. Yep.
And if not, then make sure that you, you block that user, report them to Facebook and block that particular user. Twitter's having the same issue, though. Steve Lukather from Toto says he has a fraud guy. And he says unless it has the blue check mark from Steve Lukather for Toto, he says, don't follow it. Don't listen to what they're saying. He says, I don't get why anybody would pretend to be him. But hey, Toto's got a pretty big following. All right. I wanted to mention our website of the week. If you want to get married, if you're thinking about this, Taco Bell is giving you the chance to get married.
Oh.
Now, this is, yeah, it's, you might think, wait a minute, you're not marrying me at a Taco Bell, you know, with a Frito burrito, but at
You are.
Taco Bell is offering a couple a free trip to Vegas. You get the trip to become the first pair to get married at their Las Vegas Cantina, which is a Taco Bell that does serve alcohol. And
well, it's not just that. This right. Cantina is like, it's like a lot. They really Las Vegas-ized, if that's the right word. They really made this cantina great. I mean, it's like, wow. It's like, it looks like a nightclub.
It does. It actually looks pretty cool. So now till the 26th of this month, February 2017, in case you're listening to this on replay, couples can enter the Love and Tacos contest through Twitter or Instagram. They post a 30-second video of their love story with the hashtag Love and Tacos contest. And who knows, it gives a all-expenses-paid trip to Vegas with the getting married. I think that's how that works. All the official rules and all that stuff up there, too. That's it for this week's Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemme. We'll be back next week with more of your tech.